It's easy,
okay,
right?
We're here. We're here with Scott Easterday from the Midwest Music Foundation. And Scott, tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us about the Midwest Music Foundation. And you're president of the board, right?
I am. I've been president of the board for a year. Before that, I was just a secretary on the board.
Okay. How long's the foundation been around?
It started officially in 2008.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of a wide range of what the organization's all about?
Well, we have sort of a two-part mission. One part is to provide emergency assistance to musicians in need in the form of grant funds. And we do fundraising and receive grants for our fund, which is called Abby's Fund for Musicians Healthcare. And it's for musicians in need of assistance funding in a medical crisis. And they can receive that fund by just applying on our online application form, and they just have to show that they're a working musician in the area and that prove that they're in need. And usually we can award that grant within 24 hours or less. And then the second part of the mission of the foundation is education programs and resources, professional networking opportunities for musicians, and we also sponsor a four-day-long showcase called Midcoast Takeover in Austin every March during the largest music conference in the world.
So it's a 501c3, a nonprofit.
That's and correct.
You listed some of the programs. So tell us about your own relationship with the organization, the times you've been there, what your duties have been.
Started out just volunteering. I think that's the way everybody that's part of the foundation started out. I was friends with the founder, Abigail Henderson, and she was on tour one time. I guess it was probably in about 2006 or 7. I'm not exactly sure of the date, but anyway, she visited the New Orleans Musicians Clinic because she became ill on tour, and she was so impressed that there was something like that in New Orleans that she wanted to start something like that and here in Kansas City when she came home. Unfortunately, then in 2008, she developed breast cancer. And so the music community came together at that time and did the first benefit concert, which was called Apocalypse Meow, in that year, in 2008. And that's actually what provided the base to build the foundation on. Unfortunately, after a long battle with cancer, Abby passed away in 2013. There were other volunteers like myself, Rhonda Line, who's the executive director now, and Sandra Freeman, who's the director for artist relations and promotions. We were all just sort of volunteering, and we had sort of put together a board, which was Don Simon and V Tran and Chris Meck, who was Abby's husband.
Don Simon used to be on the board of KKFI, by the way.
So yeah. He's on a lot of boards.
Yeah. Good man.
And the foundation was kind of humming along on its own power, you know, just because of word of mouth and the music community does stick together in this town and works together. And it has sort of been operating under its own inertia since 2008. And last year, we kind of got serious about the behind-the-scenes organizational part. And I was elected president. The board expanded from just the officers, president, vice president, treasurer, and secretary, to now we have 10 members, and we have committees, and we have a committee structure. We have a development committee and an education committee and a healthcare committee and marketing. And so for the first time, we're taking advantage of that organizational structure and forming committees and working on programs, and we have a strategic plan. And so what before was sort of operating on its own strength is now, we hope, getting stronger and bigger, and maybe our hope is to reach more people locally and regionally and just get more exposure to the fact that we're here to provide help for musicians in need.
Sure, and you know, the way I look at it too is, you know, I've been around the music communities for a long time, and there's musicians and there's musicians. I mean by that, you know, there's a few lucky musicians that maybe it's like a day job, maybe they work for the symphony or something like that and get a paycheck. But musicians, by a lot of them, are, you know, are kind of like self-employed. So that means there's no health benefits, there's no time. You know, just providing for those kinds of things. That, for example, the American Federation of Musicians Local 1000 was formed to handle to be a labor union for musicians that had nowhere else. They weren't part of an employer thing. So
right, yeah, it's exactly like that. A lot of musicians, if they're working musicians or it's a second job, so to speak, for them, a lot of them don't have health insurance, or if they do, it might prove to be inadequate in certain situations. And even if you have health care, sometimes because of the emergency, you get knocked down and you can't work, you can't teach, you can't drive to your gigs, you can't pay the gas bill. There's other things that come along that are not just related to the health crisis itself, but they are other things that come along are related to this, to the health crisis, that
challenges of life, for sure,
that are not going to be covered by health insurance. And so you can apply for the grant for that situation too, like if you need help paying the bills because you can't go teach your students. Or
so what are the major sources of funding? I know you've mentioned grants. You mentioned the, I don't know if it's a one time a year event that you do a fund. Well,
we have the main fundraising benefit concert every year, Apocalypse Meow. It's always the first weekend in November, and that's the main fundraising event that we have for Abby's Fund. And we get donations from our members and from sponsors, Boulevard, the Bridge, KKFI, Kissit Construction are some of our bigger sponsors. And then
some of the usual suspects, it sounds like.
I think so. And then we also get grants from ArtsKC, the Jackson County Legislature, and so part of it is fundraising, part of it is sponsorship, and part of it is grants.
So how much of it is maybe just networking as well? I mean, musicians
are a
rich community. So
that's a lot of it. A lot of it has to do with everybody knows everybody, and it feeds back into itself. And a lot of our members are people that are fans, or they're musicians and they're in the music community already, and they give annually, or they go to these, you know, benefits that we put on throughout the year. And
is it a membership foundation organization at all? I mean,
it is. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, like, a musician, does a musician pay dues, or how do they become members?
We just call it an annual membership.
Okay.
It's just $25 for the year for a musician or a fan, for an individual membership. So, and part of our new organizational structure is we've got a new database, and we're starting to keep track of the members and go back and ask them to update. And we have a new website, that MidwestMusicFoundation.org. So, and that's just another part of the organizational structure. That's our new thing. That's what we've been doing for a year. And
I know one thing is that I've really learned just hanging around KKFI and being, you know, around this place, is Kansas City has such a rich music scene. So is there any way to characterize the members? Is it just like anything from hip hop to singer songwriter, or is it mostly, you characterize it for
it's
me.
It sort of started with Abby and people that knew Abby and her friends, and then their friends' friends and their friends' friends, and it grew from there. So it sort of has a genesis with musicians that were connected to Abby or her band, the Gaslights, at the time. But since then, over the years, it's expanded away from that, and certainly now it is sort of just all over the place. But
and you've talked about some new organizational things. I mean, what has prompted the new organization that's going on now, or just
we think it worked so well for so long on its own that it seemed sort of obvious that the thing to do was to, now let's get this organized and see if we can't really supercharge it to grow even further.
Okay, now and I believe you're a musician yourself, right?
I am, yeah.
Okay, what do you play?
I play guitar and write songs.
Okay, good. Well, we really appreciate you being part of Radioactive Magazine. We appreciate what you're doing in the community. I know from the point of view of KKFI, we just love the partnership that we've developed with musicians, including the foundation. And
we're really grateful to have you as a partner. And
And we'll even sometimes say kind words about the bridge, because at least, you know, both of us being community radio stations, and both of us, you know, spotlighting local musicians, that's what it's all about. And you can't have the local musicians on too many places on the dial.
That's right. And you said something earlier about our local scene here. It's really amazing what a great music scene and art scene that we have in this town. And you really start to notice it when you go 1 mile in any direction and see a music scene or an art scene in some other town. And there are lots of great ones all over the country, but it really gives you a new appreciation for ours when you're out somewhere else and you can say to yourself, you know, this is not as cool as it is back home.
Yeah. Well, just speaking for myself, you know, I play a little bit between picking and grinning. I'm a lot better at grinning than I am picking. But you know, I've been involved with, you know, Winfield-style jam sessions for many, many years. Mm-hmm. And what I know about Kansas City is it's got blues jams and jazz jams and circle jams. And, you know, the town I grew up in, Tucson, Arizona, I go back there and try to find a jam. And, you know, people give me a bewildered blank look. And people don't realize just how fortunate they are, especially if they're into music, how fortunate they are in this town.
Yeah, and some other towns in the country that have great music scenes, it's one or two genres, one or two kinds of music. But here it's you know, we have everything from Cuban music to blues to classical. We got to have more independent dance companies in this town than a lot of other cities of maybe even bigger size. You know, there's several independent ballet/modern dance companies, and they employ the local musicians, and so it's just so widespread, and
We got about a minute left. Anything you want to add? You maybe give the website again, but anything that I should have asked you and didn't, go ahead and answer that question.
Website's easy to remember. It's MidwestMusicFoundation.org. I should say that we're going to have an open meeting. We're going to have an open meeting of our board and staff on August 3rd at the Buffalo Room. So if anybody's interested to come and see how our board meetings go, or to see the structure of our organization a little closer, then we're going to have this open meeting. Okay. I think it's going to start at 6 o'clock on August 3rd at the Buffalo Room.
Right, and the plans are for this interview. I peek behind the curtain. It's not August 1st when we're doing this interview, but it is when we're going to broadcast this interview. So we're talking about a couple of days.
It's just a couple of days from now.
Yeah. So good luck with that, and thanks for all you do in the community.
Thank you, Bill. Thanks a lot.
Take the A train, and you will go to Sugar Hill way up in Harlem. Well, I said, now if you miss the A train, then you will find it very hard to go to Sugar Hill in Harlem. Well, I said, now hurry, the train is coming. Now listen to the wheels of home, get on board train, and you will go to Sugar Hill way up in Harlem. Well, I said, now sweet bum beely ba ba dee ba dum ba ba shee ba doo dee ra da 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 ba da ba da dee ba da ba dee ba da ba 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 da sweet on dee no down sweet ba doo dee ba da ba da da. That's my Louie Louie voice. Thank you.
Well, this is Sharon Gibson, and you've been listening to a Kansas City jazz institution, Diane Mama Ray, who is here with us today. Welcome back.
Hi there. I'm sure glad to be here.
Well, we're glad to have you. Now, let's start at the beginning. What's your first musical memory?
My first musical memory, I think, was when my mother got me a piano and insisted that I play the notes on the sheet music, and I wanted to piddle around and do my own songs instead. So that did not last long.
So you wanted to improvise in the beginning.
Right, but actually even before that, my mother was a concert violinist, and she constantly played the violin around the house. So that's my first recollection.
Did she try to get you to play the violin?
Yeah, they bought me a violin. I did not want anything to do with it.
When did you discover that singing was what you really wanted to do?
I really didn't do that till I was about 13 years old. My dad was in the military, and we were stationed in Germany. And he knew some special services friends, so there was two other girls and myself decided that we would sing with a military backup band, do one song. And the name of the song was You Cheated. And
did you know what that meant at the 13?
No, not really. We just did the song with the military backup band in front of hundreds of screaming, yelling GIs, we were scared to death.
But you got applause, I presume.
And it was at that point I decided I was never going to do anything but that again.
There you go. When did you discover that blues and jazz was what you really wanted to do?
Well, I always liked the blues and jazz. Actually, when my girlfriends were going crazy over to Elvis Presley, I was really more interested in people like the Platters, Frank Sinatra, Ella Fitzgerald. Mm-hmm. Of course, those were my mother's preferences, so I kind of followed suit.
Now, I noticed that before you came to Kansas City, or you had said in your bio, it said you came from New York City.
Yes.
What were you doing in New York?
Well, at that time, I'd already been married for a short time, and that's where I went to live temporarily while my husband at that time was overseas.
And
his parents lived there.
Okay.
And so I moved there temporarily and did a few things down in Greenwich Village and starved a lot. I didn't like New York.
Okay.
So I called some friends back here in Kansas City, and they encouraged me to come back home because the music scene was going really good.
Okay. Well, I was going to ask what brought you back to Kansas City, so it was the music scene. I also read that you became friends then with Betty and Milt Abel, two of my favorites, all-time favorites.
That was way back, too, when they were playing the old Horseshoe Lounge on Truce. That was when the Truce Strip was really hot. You had Oscar's Lounge and Horseshoe Lounge, and around the corner on Armour Boulevard was the old, had the revolving stage in it in the basement. I'm trying to remember.
I can't remember.
Well, anyway, that strip was going really good at that time, and I did do a few shows there at Oscar's Lounge. But I loved Betty and Milton. Betty was the first person that was befriended me and said, "Don't give up, just keep on pushing, girl."
Okay, and then once you got started in Kansas City, you and your Mixed Emotions band did a lot of touring.
Yes.
Now, can you think of the most harrowing experience that you had on tour, or maybe?
Oh gosh, there was several. I was in and out of Kansas City off and on for about 13 years, and I remember one of the places I hated playing the most. In fact, we left there was up in Thief River Falls, Minnesota.
Oh.
And it was bitterly cold when we got there. And they wanted country and western, and they had on the marquee direct from Las Vegas.
Oh, you're kidding.
And that didn't work. And the other one was down in Texas, where we arrived. You remember the Blues Brothers movie with the chicken wire over the stage?
Oh,
if you've
seen
that.
Yeah.
Well, we got there and there was chicken wire in front of the stage. So I called my agent in Arizona and said, "Get me out of here now." So he promptly arranged for another band to come into that club, and we went on to Las Cruces, New Mexico, which was really fun.
Yeah, that sounds nice. What was the best experience you had touring?
I think one of the nicest hotels, and most of our gigs were hotels, was up in, believe it or not, Gillette, Wyoming. It was like a triple-story holodome with an indoor golf course. Mm-hmm. They had a double-story high club with a glass slide that went all the way from the second floor down to the first floor. And we were, it was packed every night.
Great.
You know,
great.
Mostly with the, and there was nothing there. The actual town mm-hmm. was probably about 5 miles north of that. And this was right at 80 Highway. And the one coming up from Colorado.
And no chicken wire.
And no chicken wire, no. That was beautiful. We really had a good time there.
Now, I think you've told me you have 3 children.
Yes.
Were they born while you were touring, or?
No, it was off and on. I took time off, you know.
I just wondered how you dealt with that.
No, they didn't. Like but I took, no, later when I was on the road, though, I took them with me on the road a lot in the summertime.
Did you have a tour bus?
No, we had 2 trucks and 2 cars. Caravan.
Yeah. Okay, and then when you settled in Kansas City permanently, more settled basis, you started doing this jam at Harlan's.
Mm-hmm.
How did you end up then at BB's Lawnside, where you are now every Saturday?
Well, we did 22 years at Harlan's.
Wow.
And they had been closed down for a while, and it seemed like a good time to make the change. And when I talked to Lindsay, he said, he didn't have anything going on a Saturday afternoon. And would I want to come out there? And I said, sure.
Now he does.
And it was time for a change. It was, after 22 years at Harlan's upstairs, it was time to make a change.
You know? So now how long have you been at BB's?
Well, let's see. We'll be celebrating 31 years August 12th. So that's, 8 more years for the 31-year anniversary of the jam.
Okay, so you've been at BB's for about 8 years.
Yeah.
Now, also, I know from your bio that you've won a lot of awards in the past, and you've picked up a couple since, I believe. I'm just curious to know, what do you do with these awards and proclamations?
Well, they're hanging on the wall in my hallway.
Well, that's good to know. They're not in a drawer somewhere.
No, they're not in a drawer. No, I'm really proud of those.
You've got Wild Woman Award and...
Right.
I can't remember what all else. Several of them, I believe. Heritage Award, I remember that one.
That was from the Pilgrim Chapel.
Right.
When we did Pilgrim Chapel.
Yeah, I think maybe what we've played is from that
And
CD.
Elder Stateswoman of Jazz. I've got that award, too.
That's the truth. That's what I should have called you rather than the Kansas City Institution. I don't know. And you also, you had the CD that we played from. You've also got a CD I know called Mama's Mood.
Right.
And the title song is Mama's Mood.
Right.
And I don't...
I wrote that one.
That's what I know. Do you remember any of the words? I'm curious.
Yeah. Well, it starts out, sometimes I'm an angel, sometimes I'm a brat.
Oh, there you go.
Just depends on who I'm with and where my head is at.
<That's>
That
good.
Pretty much says it.
Yeah, I like that. I'm going to have to listen to it. Now, in addition to your work that we in the music field... You've been active in supporting several nonprofit organizations,
right?
Including, I know, Hope House for Domestic Abuse and the Sherman Center, I think you mentioned, for autism.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you choose those particular ones? What inspired you?
Well, for a little while, for a day job, I worked at Hope House for a while as administrative secretary.
Okay.
And I saw firsthand the women and children coming in there that were beat up and... Sometimes they had no shoes, no clothes, little babies in diapers, and the moms are all, beat up, and sometimes the children, too. Mm-hmm. And I just, and I had been myself in a similar situation years and years ago. And so I felt very strongly about helping that cause, even after I left there. You know, I've been doing their benefits now, I believe, for 22 years.
That's great.
Once a year, every year in April.
I'm sure they appreciate that. I was meant to ask you earlier when we were talking about going on tour and stuff, have you ever, or who some of your favorite musicians were, and have you ever met any of them, and did they meet your expectations if you did?
Some of my favorite musicians? You mean that I just met on the road?
Well,
or
either one, yeah.
Well, gosh, there's so many. it's hard to pinpoint. Well, I met and was, kind of friends with Leon Russell, and I would see him when he's in town. He used to play the old Grand Emporium all the time.
Oh, gosh.
I remember one time I was down in New Orleans, and unbeknownst to me in the next rooms was B.B. King and some of his bands, and it was after gig hours, and we all kind of got together in our motel room. Everybody sat around and jammed, so that was kind of interesting.
That's so cool. Wish I'd been there on the wall or something. That would have been cool, yeah.
This is like, of course, you got to realize we probably drove everybody crazy because it was 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning.
Well, for one thing, they might have been used to that. But
probably.
Anyway, you've done all of these things. You did these things that we talked about for the nonprofit, and you've had your musical career, and you've had your family, your children. And then I find out that you've got your own construction company.
Yeah.
And have even done some work, some of that actual work, maybe not. Now,
I guess a little younger, I can do drywall right along with the best of them. Let's put it that way.
So that started me thinking, you know, a lot of younger women now are wrestling with trying to figure out how they can, quote, have it all. You know what I mean? And it looks like to me that you have done that and then some. So what's your secret or what kind of advice?
You have to have a lot of determination and bottom line. It just depends, you know. Some people like just one job, you know, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mind. I've always been kind of a workaholic, but I've worked ever since I was a teenager. I've just never not had a job.
I guess not.
You know, except when I was having children, of course. Anyway, but I think today, in this day and age, women are finding that they can do a lot of things that mostly were considered men's jobs. You know, I do design work for the construction company, and I draw up the blueprints, and I do all the cost accounting and the material orders, and kind of supervise the guys. Of course, that would be my sons, and I are in business together. And, you know, you can do what you set your mindset to do.
Wow.
You know.
And then you sing.
Yeah. That's what? My release. After dealing with construction all week long, you have to go sing the blues.
Yeah. I was going to ask what it was that kept you going with that. So kind of a relief from some of your other responsibilities,
the
I
blues
guess.
Makes you feel good.
Yeah, that's strange. It doesn't seem like it should. Oh, that rhymes. Anyway, how about some advice then to young singers who are starting out? What should they do or what should they not do?
Well, I would say come to my jam, for one thing. Meet a lot of other musicians. Put yourself out there. Make as many jam sessions as you can. You know, if you're a vocalist or guitar player, it doesn't matter, horn player, guitar player. I have a lot of young people that come down to my jam on Saturday afternoon at BB's, alongside barbecue. Yeah. And they're all welcome. Anybody that wants to come down, sign up and put your name on the list. Just get up and play or sing. And that will give you some recognition with other musicians, and you know, if they like you, they'll call you. You know,
make sure you
put yourself out there.
Right, I've seen some great people there at BB's too. When you're jams, and the crowd seems appreciative,
they love that.
That's
a good variety, and it's a lot of fun.
And I do understand that you are getting ready to celebrate. We've alluded to it a little bit. Those 31 years
of doing this jam
in August,
straight.
And I assume that's at BB's.
Yes, it will be at BB's. That will be on August 12th.
August 12th.
From we do 2 to 5:30 every Saturday afternoon, and when we do the anniversary show, I have thousands of photographs. I have many of them on boards, dating back to the very first year of doing the jam, and they will be on display. Everybody can look at all their past pictures from way back when.
Well, there'll be some other Kansas City folks that will recognize in those photographs.
Oh, my goodness, yes. I have pictures of Ida Macbeth, Marilyn May.
Oh, cool.
Kevin Mahogany, they've all been across my stage at one time or another.
Oh, wow, that's great. That's great. Marilyn May, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, she's been to BB's.
For heaven's sake. Somehow I'm having trouble computing that, but okay. Okay, well, again, thank you, and thank you for being a Kansas City institution or an elder statesman of jazz, whatever you want to call it.
I do want to say one thing.
Okay.
You're only as good as the musicians on your stage, and I must say, J.U. Daly, my guitar player, and Alan Monroe, and all the different drummers that I have come in every week. And of course, Jay and Alan have been with me since almost the beginning. Rich Van Zant started the jam, and then Alan took over on keys. But Jay's been around since the very beginning. And these guys are wonderful people.
Okay, well, this is Sharon Gibson and Mama Ray signing off.